Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. Here along with...
and Dave Binkley from Weird and Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One.
Good. At least somebody joined us in the chat. Oh, it's you. Yep, and our good friend, Gar the Ghoul, unable to make it again, ailing a bit. We wish him well and lots of good rest tonight. So hopefully he'll be in shape for Horrible Horrors, starring Gar the Ghoul.
And if his internet's working.
If his internet's working. Which probably triggers some of this, I would imagine. And if we stall long enough, if we stall absolutely long enough, we can tell you we are also accompanied by...
Oh, greetings, greetings, felicitations, salutations, embarkations, CW here. Always a good bet, as always.
That's right. I'm glad you brought that up, because we hadn't yet. That's our topic for tonight, betting, gambling, that sort of thing, with three lovely tales.
Yes.
One new to Eerie House Radio.
Friday. Oh, yeah. Well, Friday the lovely 13th, lucky 13th, roll those dice, roll those bones.
That's right. So lucky for you, you're stuck with us. Lucky for us, you're stuck with us. Now, obviously, Dave, if we've got a new-to-the-show program, it can't be Philo Vance and it can't be Pat Novak for hire. Got to be on stage.
On stage, yeah. Program with Mr. and Mrs. Radio, Kathy and Elliot Lewis, and, of course, a review of the show called, from broadcast television, called it Lewis's Experts at Underplay. I don't know what that means, if that's a compliment or not, but... to be an expert at anything is okay, but experts at underplay? Okay.
Yeah. A left-handed compliment? Who knows? But we'll, I don't know. I would say with those names involved, we're in for a treat with that story.
Elliot, yeah, a little bit of background on that before we get to it, too, when we get to that one.
Sure.
Underplay, overplay, foreplay? Oh, my. Sorry.
Hey, none of that talk around here. You won't hear that in the pre-show, I'll tell you.
Tisk, tisk, tisk. Oh, my goodness.
We were perfect gentlemen while we were preparing today.
It's easy to say that because you weren't there to hear us.
That's right. And as far as we know, it's not being recorded.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, great. Yeah, Matt, there's that. I blame it on Friday the 13th, you know.
Yep. And we're not talking about Jason. No siree, Bob. We're talking about oldie-timey radio. And two of them at least, not sure about on stage, two of them at least, detective or detective-like stories with Philo Vance and Pat Novak, which means Jack Webb's coming back into the house tonight.
Unfortunately, it doesn't. They tried to make... Pat Novak for Hire work a short time ABC did after Pat Novak left to work on Dragnet. And the guy that took over and the writers that took over just weren't the same. Because, you know, he did all those really strange comparisons that Jack Webb and his roommate were making up as they went along to make the show something different. Well, it just became a typical detective type story and didn't last. Maybe he lasted out of a season or something, but... That was it. Yes, Coach, you're right.
Well, I see a name attached, though, that might give it some redeeming qualities. John Brown is in this?
Is John Brown? He may be in there. Yeah, that would give it a redeeming quality, but yeah.
Yeah, well, why don't we remove all mystery? We might as well start with Pat Novak tonight. What do you think?
Sure.
Let's do.
All right. Yeah, I'm interested now. You got me going. I want to hear the difference between him and Jack Webb and see what we got there.
That would be just fine. That would come to us episode number 51. So it would have been in the second season, obviously, from August 3rd of 1947.
and entitled Gambling Ring.
The American Broadcasting Company presents Pat Novak for Hire.
Goat for Hire. Goat for Hire.
Sure, I'm Pat Novak, for hire. I got a couple of boats down on Pier 19 on the San Francisco waterfront. Sometimes I rent them out, but I found out it's easier to keep my budget healthy by risking my health in other ways. So I work around doing odd jobs. You can take that any way you like. But the best you can say for it is that it beats begging. At least you don't always limp. If your luck's in, you can keep a half lap ahead of the bill collectors if you don't let it go to your head. I did once. I helped a guy who owned 7 hotels convince a blonde in San Rafael that her memory wasn't that good after all. The payoff was too rich for my blood. I got the idea that with that kind of money, I could take over the gambling joints up around Lake Tahoe. It took them 3 days to show me I was wrong. I'd worked my way down from the gold-plated joints to a place called the Broken T, where they still recognized a dollar as currency. I was beginning to figure how long it'd take me to walk back to the bay when the help came along. He was a little guy with a pair of eyes I wouldn't trust with anything I wanted again. The kind of quiet, dark clothes that'd make it easy to get lost in an alley. He knew me.
Well, Novak, not doing so hot, are you?
I eat.
You want to make a quick buck?
There must be a reason. Tell me that first.
I'm hot. I shook the wheels down for a flock of dough.
You call that trouble?
Not yet. But I like to look ahead. How do I know these guys like it that I got all their money?
If it hurts you, give it back. They'll take it.
I got a better idea. I want to take it down to San Francisco.
Look, Crocker owns the Southern Pacific. If you got an urge to travel, talk to him. If you got a proposition, spread it out.
I'm driving down. It's a lonely road. I want you to go along as a bodyguard.
If these guys are out to hijack your role, 2 of us won't stop them any more than 1. They come in bunches when they want to.
Do you want the job, or are you going to talk me out of it?
I'll ride down with you for $200.
You charge a lot for a ride.
You said it's risky, remember?
Okay, here's 50. You get the rest in San Francisco. I see you outside in 5 minutes. My name's Brown. I'll be waiting in my car.
Brown, huh?
Yeah, Brown. John Brown. Want to make something of it?
How can you? He was a quiet guy. We drove along for a couple of hours, and you could have repeated all he said on one deep breath. I kept watching the cars along the road, waiting for the muscle boys to show up, but nothing happened. Pretty soon, I got the feeling that they weren't after him at all. I guess he'd seen too many movies. I finished off a pack of cigarettes as we got down out of the mountains and got him to stop at a roadside joint for reloads. He wouldn't leave the car, so I was all alone when a girl came up to me at the bar.
You going down to San Francisco?
Something like that.
You got room for me.
How far are you going?
That depends on who I'm with.
You might be handy at that. Car's without a heater. I don't have the onus.
So you'll keep one hand on the wheel.
So you better ask the guy who does. He's sitting out in the car.
Why don't he come in?
Don't build him up so fast. I got a car, too.
Where'd you get it? Steal it?
You selling medical insurance, maybe?
Why?
You're going to need it if you keep elbowing into my face.
Speaking of elbows, what do you mean, trying to muscle in on my dame?
You two together?
Yeah. Why?
That's what I've been wondering. Why? So long, sucker.
What do you make of this?
I'd say you're out. You don't have to slide.
You're to blame for this.
Yeah. And tomorrow I'm going to make it rain.
I can start a storm right now.
Go right ahead. You've got the wind.
Well, you...
You cooled him nice, stranger. What started that?
Bad habits.
Yeah?
Too many cigarettes. I guess I didn't have to hit the guy, but I was all geed up over the ride. I had to take it out on somebody. Outside, the air was cold and clear. The river made soothing noises in the darkness. I figured it'd be an easy night from then on in, but Brown was having the fidgets.
Come on, Novak. Let's get going.
Where's the dame?
What dame?
One came out here, a hitchhiker. Wanted to ride to town.
I didn't see any dame. Come on, let's go.
Oh, that's queer.
What's queer? Let's go, let's go.
Now, suddenly you're nervous. What's the matter?
When I need a doctor, Novak, I know where to find one.
Yeah? But can you find one who shakes synchronized with yours? Otherwise, he's going to have a tough time with your pulse. From there on into town, John Brown didn't say a word. When we came across the Bay Bridge, he stopped in the terminal and made a phone call. Then we drove up to his place, a big corner apartment house up near the Civic Center. He told me to wait in the car while he went in to put away the money. I sat and smoked cigarettes and watched the dawn begin to light up the long, empty streets. I must have been there a half an hour before anything happened. And then it all began to happen at once, starting with Hellman. A homicide detective with a grudge against the world that he takes out on me. I hope I didn't keep you waiting, Novak.
Yeah, that got you out of bed, Hellman. Can't be insomnia. That takes conscience.
You'd be the sort to know about that.
Mind if I let the car over?
Why not? I didn't steal this one. I prefer roadsters.
John Brown, huh? Now, there's a name. Where have I heard that before?
That's a foreign name. Polish, I think.
That's not where I heard it. It was broadcast in connection with a stolen car.
Try again. The keys, see?
So maybe he was careless and left his keys in his car.
Yeah, maybe I'm whimsical and changed my name to Brown. Go on, Hellman. You can't pin anything on me.
No. Give me the keys.
What for?
I'm looking in the trunk. We got a tip.
Not on this crate. We just got in from Tahoe. Nobody knows we're here.
Sure, sure. And if you aren't here, I guess there's nothing in the trunk either.
I'll bite.
What'd you find? A body. A girl's body. I'm not intruding, am I?
Not on me. You better get Brown. He's in the apartment there.
Sure. But won't you be lonely?
Look, Brown hired me to ride down from Tahoe with him. He cleaned up at the tables and wanted protection for his role. It's his car and his girl. Let's get him.
All right, come on. Oh, Brown listed. Nervous. Upset. Maybe you need a rest.
Framed.
Sure, somebody else did it. Shame on them. Come on, Nova.
The girl was a pickup, a hitchhiker. Why should he kill her?
I got a better question for you. Where can I get a lawyer?
I saw a purse with the body. Let's look it over.
Don't tell me you didn't rob her, too.
The purse didn't turn up much. Some keys, a little mad money, makeup stuff. A letter to Alice Stone with an address out in the Potrero district. The letter was no good, just a guy trying to patch up a split. By the hunch that Brown must have known Alice. That was the only way the killing made sense. I needed to get some dope on Brown. I needed to know about Alice. Hellman took Brown's address off the registration card, and I couldn't see whether it helped me any. No one had seen us together all the way down from Tahoe. Even if Brown were picked up, he could swear he'd never seen me before. With the car listed as stolen, he was a cinch to prove it. Now, I needed help bad. So I started looking for my old friend Jocko Madigan, an ex-doctor turned boozer who had more connections around town than the water department. I ran him down in a trap on Ellis Street trying to hold back the recession in liquor sales.
Hello, Patsy, my boy. Join me. This is the first one today.
Look, I'm in trouble, Jocko.
You're in trouble. Think how I feel.
What's the matter? Sick?
No, just worried. I was reading in the paper here that the good ship Clyde Harris went down off the New England coast last night with 10,000 cases of scotch on board.
Yeah, there's some left. Listen, Jocko, I'm in a jam.
When did that become news?
I was up at Tahoe, and a guy hired me to drive him down here.
He didn't know you.
It turns out the car is stolen, and there's a body in it. And the guy's disappeared.
Well, I don't blame him.
The body belonged to a girl named Alice Stone at this address.
10,000 cases of scotch. Can you imagine that? No.
And the way I figure it, the girl must have known the killer. I'm not very sure that John Brown, who claims his car was stolen, is innocent either. Mighty strange that he left the car keys lying around.
What'd you want me to do?
Get on the grapevine. Find out if this John Brown is tied up in the rackets. The same for Alice Stone. Find out if they ran around with each other. Whatever you can about them.
All right, Patsy, but you'll have to wait. I've got to catch up on my drinking first.
Can't you lay off this stuff for a little while?
Are you telling me how to live my life again? You who consort with murderers, car thieves, and women of dubious ways? Push the bottle over here.
Look, Jocko, see if you can put the finger on a neat little guy with a pair of con man's eyes. Black hair, toy mustache, and dresses like Dapper Dan. About 150 pounds.
I imagine you trying to tell me how to live. You who've got more bad habits than a dope fiend's convention.
The guy goes for dark, expensive clothes. He doesn't talk much unless he has to.
Yeah, when I drink, I get the hangover. All you have to do is breathe regularly and trouble's all over town. You had any social conscience, you'd go somewhere and hang yourself. I can't understand how I tolerate having you around.
Will you get a line on the guy for me?
From the way you described him, it ought to be a lay-down cinch. There's only about 10,000 men in town who'd fit that description. Will 100 or so of them be enough?
I want one. It's a long gamble. But try, will you, Jocko?
Imagine that, with the ocean full of ships hauling guano, bones, cattle, oil, lumber, pineapple, sugar, old newspapers, and gunny sacks. The one boat that has to sink.
Will you get on it?
There's no hurry. It's only you at stake. So long, lover.
I grabbed some breakfast, picked up a cab, and went out to the address of Alice Stone. It matched a wooden house that looked 2 years older in Utah but was trying to lie about it with a new plaster front and a fresh set of doorknobs. It looked like it had been built by an amateur who read the blueprints upside down. A dame answered the door. She was about tie-pin high to a six-footer, and she had red hair. The heavy, wavy kind that made you think she must be healthy. But that wasn't hard to do anyway. The way she filled out her morning coat didn't leave much to worry about, except the seams. She could talk, too.
Neighborhood's improving.
You know Alice Stone?
Sure, she lives here. I might have known she'd see you first.
Who are you?
My name's Skip Harper, and Alice isn't home. What can you do with that?
How do you know I want to? Maybe I'm a salesman.
Well, look, mister, you aren't fooling anybody. You look about as much like a salesman as I do a decoy duck. Now, what do you want with Alice, or do you have to be particular?
I can't use her. She's dead.
A salesman. With 5 o'clock shadow at 10... Did you say dead?
Yeah. They found her in a car downtown this morning.
You're a cop.
No, you're wrong. Why should it worry you?
What do you mean?
You know who did it?
I don't know anything. I just don't like jams. Tell me how it happened.
We were coming down from Tahoe. She was in a roadside hamburger trap. She asked me for a ride, and I sent her out to talk to a guy who owns the car. The next time I saw her, she was tucked away in the trunk.
Why'd a guy kill her, just like that?
That's what I'm after. Maybe he just didn't like dames. There's probably a better reason.
You think maybe he knew her?
Yeah. That's where you can earn a gold star. Did you know anybody by the name of John Brown?
Describe him.
He was playing the wheel at the Broken Tee up near Tahoe. Smooth little guy, about two sizes over a jockey. Wax mustache, a pair of eyes you could use to freeze fish.
So, that one. All right, I know him.
Give me an introduction.
His name's Brown, all right. I didn't know his first name before. He's a small-time hustler around town. Used to take Alice out now and then when he felt like tearing up a nightclub. Cops arrest him yet?
Hellman, a homicide dick, is knocking on his door about now. I don't expect him to be home.
No, he won't be. He has hideouts.
Name some of them.
I'm afraid to.
He can't hurt you. He's too busy playing cops and robbers.
You don't know Brown.
I gotta get to know him. Give.
I don't want to get mixed up in anything.
Neither do I, but I am. I need Brown.
Why don't you forget Brown?
That'd be bad manners.
What's wrong with bad manners? I know some that are fun.
Yeah, you would.
More fun than Brown will ever show you.
You keep. He won't.
Come here. Will this keep? You think?
You have a nice way of changing the subject. But still, where's Brown's hideout?
I won't tell you. He'll kill me.
Yeah, that's a gamble. I'm on the spot, and that's a fact. Talk to me.
Well, I hate men.
Never mind your hobby. Give me Brown.
I hate you, you big, ugly, muscle-bound.
Brown.
You're hurting me.
Make me stop. Tell me where Brown is.
All right. He has a hideout, a little shack out near the beach.
Narrow it down.
Let go, I'm telling you. Well, I hope it's the last thing you hear.
well.
What? What?
Mm-hmm. Indeed, that's a little racy for its day, that particular show.
Yeah, that's Jack Webb would have never let the woman kiss him like that.
I know. Women of dubious ways.
Yep, like I mentioned in the chat, when Jack Webb was Pat Novak, then the helmet, the detective, was played by Raymond Burr. Neither are in this particular show.
Later, he went on to make mayonnaise.
He did.
Yeah.
Made his millions in mayonnaise.
Mayonnaise, yep. Should have stuck with ice cream, but hey, mayonnaise is, you know, on a sandwich at the right time. That's pretty good. We're just trying to keep you off balance, CW. Are you back with us?
I can't hear her.
She disappeared. Maybe she had to step away. Who knows?
Or send her off and bring her back. Sometimes that does it, too.
All right, let's try it. Put her in limbo and back. Are you back? Are you front?
Hey.
I'm kind of sideways. But, yeah.
I'm usually upside down. So
obviously, John Brown not acting in it. John Brown is a character in this with the game.
A character in it, yes.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, he's no Jack Webb, but still an entertaining story.
It is an entertaining story. But you know what? The lines that Jack Webb used that can make ridiculous comparisons made the show so much funnier. You know, I think one show I sat down there and wrote down as many as I could. I got about a dozen of them and started repeating. They're just absolutely hilarious. That isn't there but that was something that Jack Webb added, you know, to the script.
And even if not, I just can't picture anybody else doing a good read of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The way he would.
Yeah.
He has something of a deadpan to his approach. Oh, you're back.
He did. I am. I'm here. Yeah, I was listening, and Jack Webb did have that sort of snappy comeback sort of verve in his voice that was very unique.
That's right. Jack Webb would have never let the dame kiss him, that's for sure.
True.
Nah, just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts.
There you go. Yeah, I wonder what
the funny thing about that line is Jack Webb never. The funny thing about that line is Jack Webb never said it. We got that line from Stan Freberg, and everybody quoted that line and ended up getting attributed to Jack Webb for Dragnet.
No kidding. Are you serious?
I'm serious.
That's,
Jack Webb
is
never
awesome.
Said it. Just the facts, ma'am. He never said that. It was Stan Freberg in his parodies of Dragnet where he kept saying that. And then everybody attributes that to Jack Webb.
Yep. That is an awesome piece of lore.
No kidding.
And that is why you need to keep listening to Eerie House.
Absolutely. My educational level just went off the scale.
Yep. Since we're talking about Jack Webb and Dragnet and Stan Freberg, I guess Capitol started making Stan Freberg go around and getting permission to do the parodies of everything he was doing. And if he couldn't get permission, then he would not be, Capitol would not record it for him. And he got to the point where he wanted to parody this Dragnet that he wrote with Dawes Butler. So he went to Jack Webb, and Jack Webb was in with the band that was doing, the orchestra that was doing the background music for Dragnet and the TV show. And I guess Jack Webb saw him and shout out, "Freberg, I wondered when the hell you were going to get to me." Jack Webb loved it so much. That was actually Jack Webb's orchestra that did the stuff for Stan Freberg's records of the St. George the Dragonette, the Little Blue Riding Hood, and the Christmas story that he did. That was Jack Webb's actual orchestra, because Jack Webb wanted it to sound that close.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That is amazing.
So awesome.
That's wild. That's simply wild. What a tribute. I mean.
Yep.
You are a wealth, Fort Knox of the billion-dollar lotto of info.
Well, I am a cesspool of information, and some of it comes to the top. Just don't mind the smell. Don't mind the smell.
My goodness.
Someone call the Roto-Rooter man.
Some days I walk away from this show feeling just a little icky.
Go take a shower.
The disturbing part is I like it.
This part brought to you by Lux Soap.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? We need the lava after some of our shows.
We need Life Boy, the big guns.
There you go. Well, let's soap the skids and move along as we complete our story for Pat Novak for Hire, Johnny Brown Gambling Ring. Not starring Johnny Brown. That was
from
beautiful.
From Skip's place out to the beach wasn't much of a drive. I went up and over Twin Peaks, watching the city and the bay spread out beneath the road like a giant map. The sun was working for the Chamber of Commerce that day, and the whole region was glowing. Every backyard was full of clothes blowing in the wind. As the highway neared the beach, it began to turn up bunches of kids on their way to cash in on the weather. John Brown's hideaway was one of those old pioneer shacks built out near the ocean in the old days by guys who wanted to get away from it all. It was painted a weather-beaten brown, tilted a little on one side, and it looked like something that had been washed ashore in a bad storm a long while ago. I knocked on the door, but all that brought me was echoes, so I made a door out of one of the side windows. The inside of the place looked like something out of a hobo jungle. None of the furniture matched. The best piece inside would have made a junk man sneer. There was a broken-down setup for poker and a tired double bed, and after that you were practically on your own. The kitchen didn't turn up anything but a flock of ants and some empty bottles. I began to get the feeling Brown must have had two hideouts or else he'd left town. It shows you how wrong you can be.
All right, hustler. Reach.
You walk soft.
Practice makes perfect. Turn around slowly.
Mm-hmm.
How come you're working without a gun?
Who are you?
This is my place, so you tell me.
My name's Novak. I'm looking for a guy named Brown.
You're all right so far. I'm Brown. Who tipped you off I'd be here?
I don't remember.
No, you don't remember. So let me guess. It was that punk Venanti.
Never heard of him.
Never mind the rube routine. You got a hustler written all over you. What did Venanti send you here for? Did you think I know too much?
If I was sent to rub you, do you think I'd come without a gun? Start using your head.
I like the way it's working. Tell me more.
I can't tell you anything. You don't fit my blueprints.
Don't get smart with me, hustler. Venanti sent you. Tell me what for.
If you're Brown, you don't need any new worries. You've got an armful already.
I'm feeling no pain.
The cops have your car down at the station.
What for?
They don't like them with dead bodies inside.
Yeah, steady now. Let's have that again.
A dame named Alice Stone was found stuffed in your trunk. You're hotter than four stoves. Laugh yourself out of that.
If you know so much, why aren't you yelling copper?
Don't worry. They're on their way. I'm trying to get the key to the killing.
If this turns out to be a frame...
Look, I saw the guy who did it. I'm the only one who did. That's better than your gun, so treat me nice.
If you saw the murder, you can help me out.
Sure. What do I get for it, a merit badge?
Yeah, things are coming too fast. I got to do some checking.
You better spill what you know or else I'm liable to forget mine.
You got a nice lever there, hustler. If you can back up your talk. If the dame's dead.
Look who's bargaining.
Before I tell you anything, I need to check around.
Just wait a while. The cops will tell you everything.
I like to find out things for myself.
You will. I got a good grapevine in the county jail.
Now, I'll do it the hard way.
You forget I have a lever on you now.
Yeah. Remind me to get scared about that. Try some aspirins for that, Andy.
I woke up twice before I decided to make it stay that way. The house was so quiet, I could hear someone playing the piano several houses away. It was a nice, clean sound, neat and full of try. No wise guys in it, figuring fancy double crosses. No dead bodies. No policemen who argued with their knuckles instead of their heads. Probably some girl who thought a blackjack was a card game. I lay there listening to the music for a while, and I got up and brushed off my clothes. Now, there were three places I could find Brown. He wouldn't dare go to his home. He wouldn't return to the hideout. That left Skip's place. On the way over, I stopped at a drugstore and phoned Jocko to find out if he'd turned up anything. You left out the hiccups. It went like this.
Hello, you reprobate renegade from all that's good and holy.
Skip the overture. Did you check on those people I asked you about?
Sure, I found out about them. Old Dr. Madigan and his crystal ball. He knows all and he knows all and like that there.
Tighten it up and tell me some.
That girl Alice Stone, you remember?
How can I forget?
She lived with a dame in the Potrero named Skip Harper. Nice people. The landlord served eviction notices every day except legal holidays.
Yeah, so they liked a good time. Then what?
Then she owns a half interest in a gambling joint around Lake Tahoe. It's not much of a place. They say the roulette wheels of so many magnets hung around them, the nails began to come out of the walls. Her partner runs the joint, and she shows the suckers in from down here.
How'd you make it the wheels crooked?
I have my informants. I have a network of good drinking folk who get around and hear things all the time. You'd be surprised how careless a guy can get with talk when he's got his elbow in a barroom ashtray. Now, as I was saying...
If the wheels are fixed, how come Brown was able to shake the joint down for $50,000?
I don't know how he did it. Maybe he was wired, too. All I know is that they've got better control of the ball than Bob Feller ever had on his best day. It's easy to believe if you know Skip's partner.
Yeah? Introduce me.
Name's Benanti.
What's that again?
The partner's name's Benanti. He's wanted in 8 states and Cuba.
Benanti. I'll remember the name. How'd you get on Brown?
John Brown? Ooh, swell guy. Helped free the slaves. A friend of man. A tribute to the nation.
I've heard that song. Now let's talk about the local Brown.
A small-time hustler. Petty larceny stuff.
You didn't get any tie-ins with Vanatti?
Oh, yeah. He was up at the gambling joint near Tahoe last night. Cleaned the place out. $50,000. Could buy a lot of schnapps.
It's beginning to fit together.
No doubt your mighty intellect has found the key.
I can count up to 10 if I don't wear mittens.
Sometimes 13, I'll bet. Well, who did what to whom?
Brown's got a partner working for him.
You don't say.
I'm going over and shake it out of Brown. You must know where the guy's hiding.
Well, don't go looking into too many auto trunks. Those things bite. So long, lover.
What Jocko told me began to give me some hope. The thing the picture needed was one more man, and a partner for Brown would round it out nicely. Yeah, Brown must have figured someone to try to hijack his role and hired a friend to bring it down to San Francisco. That didn't explain the killing. That didn't explain a lot of things. But it was the lead of the guy who could explain it. I needed Brown. As I gunned the car over the hills towards Skip Harper's place, I began to feel better. I was thinking how Hellman would look when I dumped the killer in his lap. There was a crowd along the street in front of Skip's place. Just as I drew up, Hellman came out on the porch. As I got out of the car, one of the neighbors pointed to me.
Novak, huh? They gave me a description, but I didn't think it was you. The guy they described sounded human.
Your jokes stink, Hellman. Try imitating birds or juggling.
The bird imitations are for you, Novak. You'll be singing to the DA any minute now. Come on in the house.
Oh, it's Brown. Where's the dame?
What does it do, kill her, too?
Come off it, Hellman. You can't pin this on me.
I don't have to. The neighbors did it for me.
Why should I kill my alibi?
Because he wasn't. What did you do with the dame, Novak?
Why don't you try thinking for a change?
I do my poor best. For instance, I think you killed the dame in the car and then tried to saw it off on Brown. Then you caught Brown here this morning and killed him.
What for? Or don't you care?
For $50,000 Brown won at the Broken Tee up at Lake Tahoe.
The neighbors saw me come here. I must have seen Brown come here, too, after I'd left.
Nobody saw Brown come. Why didn't you buy a witness, Novak? You can afford it.
The dame's gone?
We haven't looked under the rugs.
How'd you get the dope on Brown when all that dough?
We phoned Tahoe, bright boy. You've heard about the telephone?
Vaguely. Who'd you talk to?
The police. And then a guy named Benanti. He says he remembers you following Brown out. And that the dame was with you, too.
It's a lie.
Sure, sure. But the $50,000 is still missing.
Brown wasn't with me. He was a little guy.
It's the climate. He grew since you two dropped him here this morning.
I need some pictures.
Well... You drop Brown. The dame's going to drive you home. You proposition her on the way to help knock off Brown. She turns you down.
Not those kind of pictures. Are there any photographs around the house?
Yeah, there's some in the bedroom. Why?
Come on, let's look. The way she looked, she'd like cameras.
Here's one on the beach. What's she wearing?
That's a bathing suit. Here's the one. Towel.
Well, look at this nightclub gown. How do they hold those things up?
Thumbtacks.
Yes.
So that's Benanti. Look at the two of them posing in front of their sucker trap.
So what?
He's the guy who did it.
Sure, over the phone.
Did you phone him or he phone you?
He phone.
You want him?
What for? I got you.
He's here in the city, hiding out at Brown's place at the beach. Here's the address.
What kind of a windy is this, Novak?
Pick him up, will you? He said he was at Tahoe, and he is in the city. It smashes his alibi.
All right, but if you're trying any fancy work...
Are you going after him, or do we waltz some more?
How to hold you?
I'll be around, you know that.
What are you going to do?
I got some cleaning up to do. There was only one place for Benanti to be. I headed the car out Potrero and down Bayshore Highway to the airport. I was betting everything on a hunch. Sometimes that's the way you have to play it. Sometimes hunches pay off. The plane I got was built for hurry. Skip still had her overnight bag in her hand when I walked in on them at the Broken T. Benanti began to act nervous when he saw me, not Skip. I began to wonder if she'd ever known how it felt to be frightened. You'd never guess it from the way she talked.
Hello, Novak. Don't you have a shave?
I had a close one just now.
Doesn't show.
You don't know where to look.
What do you want, Novak?
I got it.
Don't be cryptic, baby. It doesn't become you.
You don't act nervous. Do you care about jail?
Nobody's going to jail, Novak. Except you, maybe.
I'd be nervous if I had explained all those dead bodies back in Frisco.
We don't know anything about dead bodies. We've been up here for hours.
Yeah? I had a hunch that'd be your alibi.
That's no alibi, Novak. It's a fact.
It won't gel, Benanti. You're cooked.
Look, Novak. Brown deserved to die. He killed Allison. Before that, he fixed the wires on the wheel so he could break this place. He robbed us of $50,000. We had a right to get it back.
Is that what Benanti told you?
That's the way it happened, Novak. There's $10,000 in it for you, if you can remember it that way, too.
$10,000? Easy there, Vin.
That was a little double talk, baby. He was trying to bribe me to dummy up on you.
Dummy up? I know what happened.
When you get through dreaming, try this for a bedtime story. Benanti hired Brown to pick up the winnings while he ran the table. Then with Brown dead, Benanti was going to fly back here in his private plane for the same alibi he's using now. Only he'd own the Broken T.
You're lying.
Shut up, Finn. Tell me more, Novak.
The plan began to sour up when Alice tried to thumb a ride. Alice knew him, so he killed her. He still needed to kill Brown, but he figured then he could hang the double killings on me and make it even better.
You're on the needle, Novak.
The only trouble was that Brown wasn't home. Finn had to chase him. When he finally found him, Brown was at your place. I don't know what happened there, except that Benanti must have killed Brown before he had a chance to talk.
How was that? A gun at the store.
So when you come back, Brown's dead, and Benanti tells you he did it to recover the money.
Yeah. Well, you were going to double-cross me,
then. He's lying, I tell you.
See if you can prove it to a jury.
I should have known.
In case you get any fancy ideas about trying to lie out of it, I got a witness to feel the motor of your plane. It's still hot.
That $10,000 offer still stands.
I need you to clear me.
Yeah. And I could use the sole ownership of this joint.
You wouldn't rat on me.
Oh, watch me, baby. I'll let you rot in jail.
Novak, I'll make it $25,000 if you help me quiet this dame.
You would, Vin? Start out by quieting this.
They were lousy shots. They both lived. That is, Benanti lived until he got a bad case of asthma in the San Quentin gas chamber. Skip got off with a flock of scars and some good advice from the judge to stay away from questionable characters. But advice is free, and Skip was the kind who went after the dough, so I see her now and then. She's gone honest, I think. Sometimes we toss dice and... I've known her to lose.
Hello?
on tonight's program were Ben Morris as Novak, John Galbraith as Inspector Hellman, Jack Lewis as Jocko, and Mary Milford as Skip, with Henry Leff, Jerry Walters, Kurt Martell, and Lucille Bliss. Special music by Otto Clare. Listen next week at this same time when over most of these stations, the American Broadcasting Company presents Pat Novak for Hire. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
ABC. Wait a minute, that's not right. All right, that's E-N.
I think you were thinking of NBC.
Yes, I was. All right. So let's make CW do the moral. Here we go.
Okay. The moral of this story is...
Wait
a
minute.
When you got a dicey day...
Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story by CW.
The moral of this story is never throw dice with a dicey dame. There you go.
Ooh. Oh, my. That's a good one. I couldn't find my phony baloney. Couldn't find my sound bite. Sorry about that. Oh, here we go.
Uh-oh. Here.
And I'm sure Gar is waiting for his.
Sorry, Dave. I was ready. Erie House Radio proudly presents... A Garrulous Moral of the Story, as written by Gar. Yeah, fur.
Okay, when betting two murders on the house, it's cheaper to take the money and run, which he did. Yes.
Oh, it's on.
That yodeling gherkin, that giggling gherkin.
The yodel off.
The yodel off. This time, it's personal. Another great yodeler.
That lowers my blood pressure by about 10 points.
You need to get Roy Rogers yodeling. He did some yodeling in his song.
He did.
Yeah.
Yep. I have one of his vinyls he did that on. He did Hoppy Jean and Me, and he yodeled there in that song as well. Riders in the Sky did yodeling.
Yeah.
And most recently on The Voice, a 10-year-old girl took the place by storm by yodeling. A 10-year-old girl.
Whoa. That's awesome. Was her name Heidi by chance?
That's incredible.
No, it was not. It was not.
just asking. I thought maybe. What are the odds?
I don't know. Was her name perhaps Ricola? And Ricola.
Ricola.
That's right.
You know, sorry, Gar. Didn't mean to steal your thunder.
Yes, we need those big horns.
We're horny enough. Yeah.
Hey, stop that. Not me. I'm as pure as the driven snow.
Yeah, I've seen snow in your part of town. Yeah.
but I drifted.
Oh, my goodness. Friday the 13th strikes again. Oh, my. Oh, my. I'm leaning towards the fainting couch. Oh,
yeah. The fainting couch. These couches for something else in Hollywood, but we have a fainting couch in anybody's house.
Okay, we're going to hashtag Me Too now in just a second.
There we go, another Me Too moment. Another Me Too moment. That's what I live for, waiting for my first lawsuit. The next episode we have for you tonight, we might as well stick with the detective-like scene and move on over to Philo Vance.
Oh, good old Philo Vance.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
I'm trying to think. Is that Ed Begley that was Philo Vance? And I'm kind of thinking there.
Could have been.
He may have been one of the incarnations. I think there were a few actors who took on the mantle of Philo Vance.
Yeah.
There were for the movies. I think for radio, there was basically, the one guy, and I don't know why I can't think. I'll have to pull that up.
Doing Googles.
Yes, we need all the help we can get. No, I am not a robot. Please. Jackson Beck. Jackson Beck. There we go.
Ooh, I love Jackson Beck. He's got a great set of pipes.
Yes.
He was Bluto. Yeah.
He did. There were like two or three seasons of that, and he did it for the entire run that I believe. I mean, he also was also the announcer for The Adventures of Superman.
Yes.
And so many other things. As a matter of fact, even did many episodes of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. So he took it from the 30s all the way up until the early 80s, just about.
Yep, nice. And we're going to hear him tonight in the one-sentence murder case from Philo Vance, originally broadcast.
It was episode number 53 from, what was that, July 12th of 1949.
And he's coming for the goat.
I'm going to Hollywood, Al.
Yes, so I heard. I was very glad to hear about the break you got there. Very glad. You don't know how glad. I was getting a little tired of this penny ante penny arcade I'm running.
You haven't changed a bit, Al. I was hoping you would. That's why I came down here to see you. All right. How much is it going to cost to keep your mouth shut?
About what I know about you?
Yes.
Well, Dale, darling, I haven't decided yet. I'm not sure. I am the talkative type, you know.
How well I know. Al, I can't leave myself open to blackmail by you for the rest of my life.
Honey, you brought up the whole matter of blackmail. I didn't. Of course, if after you become a big star you happen to mail me a couple of grand every so often, I wouldn't squawk. In fact, I'd be practically speechless. You know what I mean.
I know. I'm sorry to say. I can't go out to Hollywood with you hanging over my head, and I don't have the money to buy you off. I thought maybe if I came down here today, you'd be willing to forget what you know about me. But I see that was a mistake.
Offhand, I'd say it was.
Well, that means that something's got to be done about you, Al. And I know just the guy who can do it. Tell me I can't get in to see Philo Vance. I've got to get in his private office.
I'm sorry. I'll have to announce
you. Get out of the way, young lady. I'm going through that door, and you're not going to stop me. Out of the way.
You're not going in there. You can't just break in on Mr. Vance that way. I tell you.
I tell you, I'm going to.
What's going on here?
Mr. Vance, this girl insisted on going right into your office. I told her she'd have to wait until...
I don't have to wait until anything, Vance. I've got to talk to you.
Well, I guess there isn't anything I can do, but listen, is there? Come in, miss, please.
Thanks. Sorry I caused a disturbance, Vance, but I'm upset.
You rather upset my office assistant, I noticed. Must be catching. Please sit down.
Thanks, Vance. I'm Dale Leslie. I'm supposed to sign a contract out for Hollywood next week, only there are complications, and I'd like to hire you to straighten them out.
I'm at your service.
Okay, Vance. A fellow named Al Baker owns the Penny Arcade on South Street.
Yes?
A couple of years ago, before I broke into show business, I did something I'm not very proud of. He knows about it. He'll bleed me for life if I make good in pictures.
You want me to see him?
Well, that wouldn't do any good. I've seen him. What I want you to do is to see a man named Davy Rowland. He's my manager. He's also in love with me, and he's a little on the tough side.
You told him about Baker?
That's right, and he didn't like it. He took a burn. He said he'd get Baker. Maybe that's what I wanted him to say, but... what I really wanted was for him to throw a scare into Baker. Now I'm afraid what's going to happen.
In other words, you want to hire me to prevent your Mr. Rowland from doing anything that might be regretted by you and him.
Not to mention by Al Baker, Vance. You see now why I had to get in here to see you. I didn't dare take a chance of being turned away.
I understand. Paradoxical, of course, you're wanting me to keep Mr. Rowland away from Al Baker when you'd so much rather see Mr. Baker dead.
Without the pennies, get your pennies.
Yeah. Well, mister, what's with you? You're blocking the booth. You want change or you just want to attract attention?
I'm sorry. I didn't realize I was in the way. My name is Markham. I'm the district attorney. I was supposed to meet a Mr. Baker who called me, and I don't...
Hello, Markham. I'm Baker.
Oh?
I heard you talking to Pop here. Come on back into my office, will you?
Certainly. You told me on the telephone that Philo Vance had phoned you.
That's right. Few minutes before I called you.
As I understand it, he's been engaged by a Miss Dale Leslie to keep her manager, David Rowland, away from you.
So he said. But I asked him if he was coming down here, and he said no.
He's not. I thought he'd be here to see you. One of the reasons I came down.
Look, D.A., I didn't call you to come down here because I wanted you and Vance to say hello to each other. Come on in.
Right.
I want you to tell that Rowland to lay off of me. He's a kind of a rugged character, and he's got a yen for Dale Leslie a mile long. No telling what he might do to me to show that dame how tough he is. Sit down, will you?
What do you want me to do, Mr. Baker? Supply you with police protection?
What am I, a sissy? I don't want any cops hanging around. I won't need them if you'll call up this Rowland guy and tell him you know he's out after me. That'll keep him away.
All right.
You like these pennies on my desk? I keep my souvenirs.
There isn't much to like or dislike about pennies.
Yeah?
Mr. Baker, the stuff came you ordered. I brought it here. Where do you want me to put it?
Just put the package on the desk.
Okay. It's a little heavy.
Oh, allow me.
Oh, it ain't that heavy, but thanks anyhow. Well, you got it, Mr. Baker. Brick. There.
Okay, Maisie, that's all.
Out?
Out.
Out. See you later, boy.
And some stuff I bought for this office, Mark. Wait a minute, will you? I want to see if it's all here. Ah, here's the bill. Never forget to send a bill, do they?
No, they don't.
Fountain pen desk, sir. Do you like it, Markham?
Yes, it's very nice. Decorative and useful. I like it very much.
How about this blotter here, the corners, genuine leather? You see what says, a genuine leather?
Yes, of course. Mr. Baker, would you mind letting the rest of whatever's in that package stay there until you and I have finished our conversation? I'm in a bit of a hurry.
Oh, sure, sure. That's okay. Just want you to see this stuff, that's all. Hey, are you going to call that Davy Rowland for me and tell him what you said you were going to?
Yes, I will.
Thanks, Markham. Thanks a million. So long, and take care of yourself.
That, Mr. Baker, is a rather strange thing for you to be telling me.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Kraft. That could be Dale calling now.
One way to tell, and that's to answer it, my boy, don't you think?
Sure. Hello?
Davy?
Yeah, where are you, Dale? Mr. Kraft is up here in your apartment waiting for you.
Oh, I'm calling from downstairs, Davy. Just wanted to be sure he was there so I'd know what kind of an entrance to make.
Well, make a quick one. See you in a minute. Bye. That was Dale, all right. She was downstairs. She'll be up in a minute.
That's fine.
Mr. Kraft, you're making no mistake in signing that girl. Believe me, you weren't. She's got what it takes. She's alive, tough enough to tease the men and soft enough to please the dame.
We'll see about that, Mr. Rowland. Right now, I'm very anxious to close this matter so that I can get back to the coast.
Matter of minutes now, Mr. Kraft, a matter of minutes. I see you put the clause we wanted in the contract.
Yes, we increase her salary every 6 months if we pick up her option at the end of the first period.
Good, then everything's set. Mr. Kraft, Dale is down to earth. She's real. The people are going to love her. Every mother will think she's her...
Oh, Mr. Kraft, what a pleasant surprise.
Kill it, cutie. I told him you called from downstairs.
Oh. I've just been shopping. It's been so weary. The shops on the avenue aren't at all...
Look, Dale, Mr. Kraft is a busy guy. He's got to leave town. There are your contracts on the table. He signed them and I've seen them. Write your name on both of them, will you? Now.
Oh, well, all right, but there's really no need to rush.
There really is, Miss Leslie. I'm going back to California. I have several things to do before my plane leaves.
Here's a pen, Dale. Make with a name.
Why, of course, Davy, darling. That's one. That's the other. There you are, Mr. Kraft.
Thank you very much. Forgive me for rushing, but I really have to leave. You'll hear directly from the studio, Miss Leslie, as soon as I get back.
Well, thanks a lot, Mr. Kraft. I tell you, you haven't made a mistake.
Thank you for your assurance. Goodbye, and best of luck to you, Miss Leslie.
Oh, I'll take you to the door. Thank you for what you've done, Mr. Kraft. If there were only some way I could show you...
Mr. Kraft is in a hurry.
Oh, that's right. Well, goodbye, Mr. Kraft, and thanks again.
You're welcome, and goodbye.
Well, Dale, we did it.
Oh, we sure did. Oh, now I can be myself. Look, Davy, we got the contract, and now we've got to be careful. You've got to promise to lay off that Al Baker.
It could be a little late for you to tell me that now.
Oh, Davy, you didn't...
Relax, everything's under control. Only the district attorney called me and said that Baker was screaming about what he thought I'd do to him.
Well, never mind that. What did Philo Vance say to you?
Vance? I didn't talk to him.
Huh?
What's he got to do with this?
Vance didn't call?
Well, there was no press he could call me. I was here for the past couple of hours waiting for you. The DA got me here when he called to find out from you what my phone number was. What about this Vance business? What's he want from me?
Well, I asked him to talk to you, to make sure you wouldn't do anything to Baker. I knew that you know how smart Vance is, and you wouldn't take a chance on doing anything if he was around.
You're smart. You're a genius.
What?
You're the most stupid dame that ever walked. You told Vance about you and Baker and me?
Well, I had to. Don't you see? I'd rather take a chance of having Baker talk than be mixed up in a murder story.
Well, no matter what happens to Baker, I'm the fall guy.
What?
Dale, I could kick that pretty face of yours all over this joint. I don't know what stops me.
Davy.
Except I love you. Some reason.
Well, get out of here. Get out of my apartment. Get out or I'll call the cops and have you thrown out. I'm not kidding, Davy. Get out, I said.
Get away from that phone.
You getting out?
All right, dope. Prize dope, most stupid dame that ever lived. I'll get out. But you don't know what you're letting yourself in for. Yourself and me both.
Pennies, get your pennies right here. Change your dimes, nickels, and quarters. Get your pennies here.
Excuse me, sir. My name's Markham. I had an appointment with a tall gentleman wearing a Homburg hat. He was supposed to meet me. Have you seen him?
Mister, I don't see anything but pennies. Pennies and people. Only I don't see their faces, only their hands. Been doing this for 10 years.
Bet I can tell what a fellow looks like from his hand.
Thank you. I doubt very much whether Vance would ask you for change.
Hello, Markham. How are you? Sorry I'm late.
It's all right, Vance. Just a minute after 2 o'clock. Glad you got here.
Pennies. Get your pennies here. Change your dimes, nickels, and quarters. Pennies right here.
Interesting looking man, isn't he, Markham?
Yes, he is.
Okay, Pop. Lunchtime for you. I'll take over.
Thanks, Maisie. I'll be back, you know.
Okay.
Well, Markham, it seems that you and I are working on this case together. Although we were brought in it by parties on different sides of the fence.
As I explained on the phone, Vance, I'm not really in it. All I did was warn Mr. Davy Rowland that Al Baker has appealed to us.
Mr. Rowland said he'd be here at 2 o'clock. He hasn't shown as yet. It took me several hours to reach him on the phone. I have an idea that if we get him and Baker together, we can straighten everything out amicably.
I imagine so. I wonder what it is that Baker knows about Dale Leslie.
Well, that shouldn't be hard to find out. In fact, I'm pretty sure I know what it is. If I'm not mistaken... Markham, that was a shot.
Yes, came from that room back there.
That's Baker's office. Everybody stay exactly where you are. Don't move. Please, nobody leave this place. Come on, Vance.
I'm on the way, Markham. So this was Baker's office back here.
That's right. I was there this morning talking to him. Come on, Vance.
All right.
Come on in.
Right.
Well... our friend Baker, all right. With a bullet in his head.
Slumped over his desk.
His hands are practically touching that new desk pen set he was so proud of.
His head knocked over this desk clock when he slumped. Poor fellow.
Yeah. Well, I'll get Sergeant Heath of Homicide up here at once, Vance. There's a back door to this office, so there's no point in trying to chase whoever shot Baker.
Whoever it is was out the back door the minute he fired Markham. Well, my friend, we've got a murder case. And a pretty complicated one, I imagine.
Yeah. What's this on the floor, Vance?
There's
a penny. That's probably fell from Baker's desk.
Probably. Well, Markham, we have a murder case, and you've just given it a name.
I wonder what the name is.
Oh, the Penny Any Murder Case. Of course.
Hey, I did a little bit of look up on Jackson Beck. Absolutely amazing. He began in 1931, worked on Mert and Marge and other series roles in 34. He was announcers for The Adventures of Babe Ruth. We've shared at least one of those here. In 43, he took over as the narrator of radio's The Adventures of Superman. And it was Beck who intoned the familiar prologue, Strange Visitor from Another Planet. He also, on the show, portrayed the Daily Planet's teenage copy boy and in the Superman adventures that where they featured Batman, he played Alfred Pennyworth. Also on radio, he played Joseph Stalin and other world leaders for the March of Time radio series. He starred as the Cisco Kid from 42 to 45, Philo Vance from 48 to 50, and was narrator of Tom Corbett, Space Cadet. He also did do, right here, 52 episodes of the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Now, for film, here's a couple of things I'm just going to list here. He dubbed the English voice of the judge listing Tucko's many crimes before sentencing him to death by hanging in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He also... was the narrator in National Lampoon's first comedy radio album, Radio Dinner, in 1972. Robert Dryden was a part of that album as well, by the way.
Some history here
also
now.
Also prominent voice in 1987 Radio James. For animation, not only did he play Perry White, Clark Kent's boss in the Filmation's New Adventures of Superman, he voiced Bluto in Popeye cartoons, Little Lulu's father, The Fox and Baby Huey, Buzzy the Crow, who was a foil for Catnip the Cat in a number of cartoons. He was also the voice of King Leonardo in the 60s TV cartoon series. And in the 1970-some Peanuts film, Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, he was the Snickering Cat. In the 1980s, he narrated G.I. Joe animated TV series. And he did a series of promos for NBC's NFL coverage in much of the 80s. Narrated sketches on Saturday Night Live. And, of course, movie trailers and commercials. There's not much this man didn't do. Up to 1999, he narrated a dramatized version of L. Ron Hubbard's Dr. Methuselah for NPR's radio series 2000X. It looks like he passed away July 28, 2004, 5 days after his 92nd birthday, and he died of a stroke.
Wow.
From exhaustion,
well,
no doubt. Goodness.
Yeah.
I'm ready to have a stroke just after reading all that. My God. Man was amazing.
I mean, did he leave any work for Mel Blanc? I mean,
yeah.
I don't think you had to worry about Mel Blanc, yeah.
Yeah.
I know, but my goodness.
He had a good gig.
I guess. And he did. You know, are we talking the good and bad?
They dubbed his voice in as the judge that sentenced him to death after reading all those crimes.
Wow. You're talking about Tuco. Eli Wallach's character. I have to watch that and listen. Now.
Yeah.
I
put an earworm in everyone's ear.
The great Ennio Morricone soundtrack. You know, they're using part of that. There's a passage in that movie called The Ecstasy of Gold that's playing at the end when the three of them, the good, the bad, and the ugly, meet up in the cemetery, and they're using it in Modelo beer commercials. It's called The Ecstasy of Gold.
Are you kidding?
You'll know it when you hear
it. Well, not being a drinker of alcoholic beverages, I can only say that their music taste is outstanding. Their beverage taste, icky poo.
I'm okay with Modelo. I've tried Modelo. It's not bad. It's not horrible.
Okay. I'm a musician, a friend of a friend, actually wrote a little piece of Western music for me, very reminiscent of the good and the bad and the ugly music. But yeah, it's pretty cool. I think I've used it once so far, but yeah.
Yeah. Ennio Morricone. He also did the remake of The Thing. Ennio Morricone had a little influence along with John Carpenter.
Oh, wow. Well, I know Quentin Tarantino is a huge fan. He used some of his music, or he had in the credits of Django Unchained, with appreciation to said songwriter or musical writer, rather.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's
great.
One
now
of
I
my
drew
guys,
myself
Dave.
A earworm. I can't get
right up
I
there
can't
with
get that tune out of my head.
Right up there with Bernard Herrmann. Ennio Morricone is another one of my favorite movie conductors, I guess.
Composers.
Composer. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. That's what you're looking for.
That's the word.
I ain't educated.
What a storied career.
Wow.
Yep. Jackson Beck.
And
he's in our program tonight.
Yep. We still have half a story of his to go in the story.
Yeah,
career.
We might as well get to part two. Two, mind
part
you.
Two.
The one set murder case. Time's a wasting kids. Come on, Philo. Here, Philo.
This is District Attorney Markham. The one-cent murder case began with the finding of the body of Al Baker, shot as Vance and I were in his Penny Arcade. We know that Baker had some information about Dale Leslie and that Miss Leslie feared blackmail inasmuch as she was about to start a movie contract. We know, too, that her manager, Davy Rowland, was in love with her and had threatened Baker. And I have found something very interesting about a man known as Pop who made change for the customers at Baker's Arcade. I'm about to tell what I found out to a group of reporters waiting in my office. They are very...
Good afternoon, gentlemen. All right now, quiet down, please. I won't waste your time. You want to know what developments the police have made on the one-cent murder case?
That's right, D.A. What's going on?
Well, we've made no arrests as yet. We're holding a man named George Dobbs, known at Baker's Arcade as Pop, the Changemaker.
What's with him?
Well, Sergeant Heath and I questioned him after the murder. He says he was out to lunch, but we found that he hadn't been to any restaurant in the neighborhood. Now, under questioning, he broke down and admitted that he was the former owner of the arcade.
Hey, fellas, I think the DA's got something.
Now, just a moment, please, gentlemen. Just a moment, please. We've made no charge as yet. But we have made Pop change his story a little. Now he says he didn't go to any restaurant, but was just walking around at the time of the murder.
No alibi, eh? What about your friend Vance, Markham? What's he found out?
Vance? I don't know. He left immediately after the murder. I think he went to see Miss Dale Leslie. But please, don't print that, boys. And I'll give you any details as soon as I get them.
That suits us. Right, fellas?
All right, boys. Thank you very much. That's all I can tell you right now.
Good enough. Okay, boys, I'll write a community headline for all of us. Here it is. Police expect early arrest in 1 cent murder case. Let's go, gang.
All right, I did it. You want to know why, don't you? Well, I could tell you why, but I won't. I'll tell you this much, though. He deserved to die. And if I hadn't killed him, it wouldn't have made any difference. Somebody else would have. But I didn't wait for that somebody. Can you understand that? I did it because I wanted to be the one who shot him. I wanted it known that I wiped him off the face of this earth. I wanted everybody to know I did it. What's most important is I wanted to know that I killed him. Now, do what you want with me. It doesn't matter much what it is. In fact, it doesn't matter at all.
Would you put on the lights, please, Mr. Kraft?
Yes, of course, Vance.
Thank you. Well, Miss Leslie, a very good piece of emoting.
Thanks, Mr. Vance.
It's the screen test we made here a couple of weeks ago. We shipped a print to the coast. They told me to sign a write-up.
Which you did, I understand.
That's right.
Sorry, I had to ask you to cancel your plane trip to Hollywood, Mr. Kraft. But it's quite urgent I talk to you. And I did want to see what kind of an actress Miss Leslie was, though thanks for arranging this screening.
Well, the screening wasn't any trouble. Holding me here in New York is upsetting my plans a lot, Vance.
I won't keep you here any longer than is absolutely necessary.
Well, why are you keeping Mr. Kraft here at all, Vance? He had nothing to do with Al Baker's shooting.
Of course I didn't. I never knew the man. I had no reason to want him dead.
Perhaps you never knew him, Mr. Kraft. That's possible. But I wouldn't say you had no reason. For example, perhaps you thought you had a potential star on your hands in Miss Leslie. A star that could make a fortune for your company. You wouldn't want anything to interfere with her career. Anything like what Mr. Baker might have had to say about her.
You think I'd kill Baker for that? Vance, that isn't very logical.
Murder so rarely is, Mr. Kraft. Now, before I ask you this next question, I'd like to warn you. It's the seemingly innocuous question, the one which a murderer has no reason to lie about, but often does, that in many cases traps a killer. Now, were you ever at any time in Baker's Penny Arcade?
Well, no.
All right, if that's the way you want it. You were there, Miss Leslie?
Well, of course, yesterday morning when I went to talk to Al.
What time yesterday morning?
10:30.
You're sure of the time?
Positive.
You're not wearing a watch?
I wasn't then either. But I know it was 10 o'clock when I left my apartment. It was 10:25 when I got out of a cab, and 10:30 on Baker's desk clock while I was there. That gives me a pretty good reason for knowing what time it was.
Yes, it does. You didn't go back there in the afternoon about 2?
Oh, now, Vance.
Just asking, that's all.
And what did you find out by all these questions, Vance?
Now that, Mr. Kraft, would be telling.
Miss Leslie, please excuse my dropping in on you at your apartment. This is not exactly an official visit.
Well, Mr. Markham, I'm certainly glad of that. I had quite a little semi-official visit with your friend Philo Vance about an hour ago, and I'm officially a little tired. Vance seems very interested in the Hollywood scout, Mr. Kraft, and I'm very interested in ducking all this unpleasant publicity.
I can understand that. Miss Leslie, Vance and I are working independently on this case, which is a little unusual, but I think we can get better results that way. That's why I came up here.
Uh-huh.
To see if you knew where David Rowland is. We haven't been able to find him, you know.
David? Why, he... Oh, sit still, Mr. Markham. I'll go to the door.
Whoever it is, please don't be long.
I'm quite anxious to get going on this case.
All right, Mr. Markham. Yes?
You're Dale Leslie, I know. I'm Pop. I work down at Baker's Penny Arcade. I gotta come and talk to...
Why so surprised at seeing me, Pop? You were in my office all morning.
Miss Leslie, I'll see you some other time. Goodbye.
Now, what in the world was that?
I don't know. But I know what Vance would think. He'd think Pop might have come up with the idea of blackmailing you, and when he saw me, he changed his mind in a hurry.
Blackmailing me? Well, how could he do that?
Well, supposing he saw you around the arcade about the time of the murder. He could threaten to tell that to the police, couldn't he? Miss Leslie, you're not in a very favorable spot, believe me. But I'll worry about Pop later. Right now, I want to know where David Rowland, your manager, might be.
Well, he might be almost anywhere, but... It so happens that he's with your friend, Philo Vance.
Close the door, will you please, Mr. Rowland? Noise isn't very conducive to concentration.
I sure, Vance. Up to now, I was a manager. Now I'm a door closer.
You're also a murder suspect.
Yes, I know. You're only missing one thing, aren't you, Vance? Proof. You've got your whole story and no proof.
Unfortunate, isn't it? You know who just called on the telephone, don't you?
Well, sure, I got his. It was the D.A., Markham.
That's right. He's bringing Miss Leslie down here. And he'll have old Pop and the Hollywood talent scout, Mr. Kraft, with him when he comes.
Well, let's push the rugs back. We'll have a party.
All right. Mr. Rowland, I found something very interesting in Mr. Baker's desk.
Lucky you.
Oh? Not curious?
I didn't say that.
In that case, I'll tell you what I found. It was a bill for several articles that Baker purchased the day he was killed. He bought a fountain pen desk set, a clock, a blotter, and that paper knife on the table.
Hmm? Setting up housekeeping, I guess, huh?
No. But he was supplying us with proof of the identity of his murderer.
What?
Sit down, Mr. Rowland.
You, really know who killed Baker Vance?
You wouldn't bet I didn't know, would you?
No. Only you're not going to be able to tell anybody that you know Vance. I'm going to see to that right now.
They told me you were tough, Mr. Rowland. Let's see. Oh, oh. No, Mr. Rowland. You really were a tough character, weren't you? But not tough enough.
Vance, I'm sorry that...
Davy!
What happened here?
Oh, Mr. Rowland objected to my knowing the identity of Mr. Baker's killer, Markham.
This is a little silly, this whole thing, Vance. I've got to get back to the coast.
Do you now, Mr. Kraft? Well, I won't keep you long. Oh, Markham, you know Mr. Davy Rowland had no alibi for the time of the murder, don't you?
I realize that, Vance. But you must have found out something else, and when you did, apparently he tried to get you.
Well, Davy was just the guy who would try, I guarantee that.
He tried, all right. As soon as he knew that I knew who killed Al Baker, he tried desperately.
Well, you can't blame him. He was fighting for his life, wasn't he?
No, Miss Leslie. He was fighting for yours. You murdered Al Baker. Cashier at this arcade, aren't you?
Oh, I'm everything around here. But now that Pop's the new boss, at least I could pay some real dough. Hey, Mr. Vance, I read in the papers where this gal, Dale Leslie, confessed after you accused her of killing Baker. But it didn't say why she did it.
Your former employer knew that she'd served a jail sentence at one time. That was the reason.
Oh. And the paper said how she tried to throw the heat on that manager of hers. She's kind of a rat, I guess. Huh?
Well, considering the fact that he tried to kill me to prevent my revealing that she was the killer, I'm inclined to agree with you.
Yeah. Hey, would you want to tell me how you knew she did the job?
Certainly. Miss Leslie admitted that she had been in Mr. Baker's office the morning of his murder, but denied that she'd come back later. There was a back entrance to Baker's office, and that's how she got in and out.
Well, I get that so far.
Well, she said she was positive she was here at 10:30 in the morning because she saw the time on Baker's desk clock. But the desk clock wasn't delivered until noon.
Hey, that's right. I brought it in there myself.
Yes, I know. Well, when Miss Leslie started to talk about a desk clock that wasn't delivered until hours after she was here, the morning of the murder, I knew that she had come back.
Well, sure. How could she know about the clock?
That is exactly it. And if she lied about coming back to Baker's office, it could only be for one reason. To hide the fact that she killed Baker.
Oh, I see now. Gee, thanks, Mr. Vance. Now I can go relieve Pop for lunch and be happy. I gotta go begin to hand out those pennies again.
Go ahead. Begin to hand out the pennies right at the end of the 1 cent murder case.
Alrighty, that's your...
Wrap it up!
Easy for you to say.
Wrap it up, Philo. We're running out of time as we say farewell to Jackson Beck for now. He'll be back on Erie House. You can bet that. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garless Moral of the Story, written by Gar. We... Apologies to Gar. You never blackmail a murderer. You murder a murderer. Use your head. Make it... I tweaked that one a little. I tweaked it just a little. And we do find ourselves a little short on time. Dave, you had some extra info real quick for on stage.
Yeah, just a little bit quick here.
With Elliot and Kathleen Lewis.
Oh, there it is. It's just interesting that, again, known as Mr. and Mrs. Radio, Elliot and Kathy Lewis, although she was Kathy Lewis before she married Elliot Lewis, they had always wanted, they worked a lot together on Suspense and other shows. And they wanted a half-hour weekly show, which they had complete control as early as 1946. Well, that didn't happen until 1955 when they got this particular series here, as radio was basically kind of on its way out. The interesting thing at the time, he was locked into the Phil Harris Al Space Show, and she was... locked into My Friend Irma as Stacy, the roommate, so who actually narrated the thing. Yet they still took the time to do this individual series here for 50 episodes thereabouts. So
this,
there you go.
And this one's number 36 from September 23rd of 1953.
And Elliot Lewis on stage. Kathy Lewis, Elliot Lewis, two of the most distinguished names in radio, appearing each week in their own theater, starring in a repertory of transcribed stories of their own and your choosing. Radio's foremost players in radio's foremost flesh. Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Lewis.
Good evening. May I present my wife, Kathy?
Good evening.
It's been said that first novels are autobiographical, that a new writer's first efforts at storytelling concern himself.
Although this is not historically true, it makes for a good conversational gambit.
If it were completely true, a house painter that wrote a story would write a story about house painting.
And the first effort of a bread baker would be a yeast detail.
Oh. Or to get down to what we're going to do tonight, the early efforts of a sound effects artist would contain all sound and no dialogue.
Ross Murray has been doing the sound effects here on stage practically since we started. This is not his first script. He's been writing quite regularly, but it is a strange story in that what people have to say is more important than the background sound.
Well, you're going to hear what we've been talking about because here is Ross Murray's new script, Penny Ante. Okay, if we got a little Penny Ante poker game going tonight. What do you say, Al?
Well, two, three, five.
Who else is coming? Marvin and George. I just spoke to them. They said it was okay with them.
Well, what about the wives?
Well, play bridge or something.
No, I mean, did the guys ask them if it was okay?
Oh, no, but they're sure it is. Friday night, where's to go?
Well, if those guys don't have to check with their wives, and I don't either. Count me in. What time?
Well, as soon as you guys can get home, pick up the ball and chain. We'll have something to eat when you get over to my place.
Great. See you about 7 o'clock.
Yeah, okay, so long. Oh, hey, do me a favor, huh?
Sure. What?
Punch me out. I'm ducking out 15 minutes early. You know, I got to get things lined up. Cards, food, beers. You know.
Sure, go on. I'll take care of it.
Yeah, and don't let Allison see you. He's a company man.
Yeah, don't worry.
Okay. I'll see you.
Stanley?
What do you want?
What time is it?
Quarter after six.
Should I start the coffee cooking?
Yeah, I think so. The guys should be getting home about now. What'd you fix to eat?
Cold cuts and potato salad.
Did you get any rye bread?
Yeah, and pickles.
You know I don't like pickles.
I do.
Where's the beer?
In the fridge.
Fine, I want everything to be just right. Show these guys how to really run a poker party. Last time we had one...
Phone.
I got ears. Hello? Oh, Marvin. Yeah. Yeah? She has? But you... Well, yeah, sure. No. Sure, it's okay. Yes. Yeah, goodbye.
Who was it?
Marvin. His wife wants to go see her folks.
Oh.
So we'll play pinochle. As far as I'm concerned, poker isn't a necessity. As long as congenial people... Hello. Hello, Georgie boy. I was just looking at the clock and saying the door... What? She did? When? You won, huh? Oh, you are? That one for me, pal. Yeah, go on.
I know. George's wife had another thing planned for tonight.
No, that's not it.
And what?
They had a fight. She went to her mother's house, and George is going to go out and get drunk. I told him to have one for me.
Then there were four.
I know. Look, when we play bridge tonight, it'll be husbands against the wives. If there's anything I can't stand, it's a bridge partner who... Hello? Al? You can't? Well, sure I'm mad. You just broke up the whole party. I don't want your apology. As far as I'm concerned, I'll never invite you here again. Goodbye.
You like casino?
Shut up.
You don't have to take it out on me, Stan.
No, I'm sorry, honey. It's just that... Well, you know.
Yes, dear, I know.
So, what do we do?
Hungry?
Not very.
Let me fix your sandwich.
No, I said I'm not hungry.
Well, I can't spend the rest of the evening just sitting around not doing anything.
Let's get out of the house.
Where do you want to go?
Let's get out of town.
Where out of town?
Las Vegas.
You crazy?
No, I don't want to get out of town. I want some excitement.
We can't afford a trip to Las Vegas.
It's only 300 miles or so. How much gasoline can that take?
It's not the gasoline, dear. It's a place to stay, food, maybe a nickel or so in the slot machine.
We don't have to sleep. We can stay up all night just looking around.
We have to eat.
We'll make sandwiches out of cold cuts. It's like a picnic.
Oh, Stanley, it's silly. I won't do it.
Dora, do I ever ask you for the impossible, please? I just feel like going to Las Vegas. Don't ask me to explain it because I can't. I just want to go, that's all. Please, Dora, let's go.
It's silly. It's impossible. I think you're crazy, but if it'll make you happy, let's go.
Oh, Dora. You look at me, honey. You're a wonderful girl.
I never dreamed Las Vegas was like this.
What'd you think it was like?
I don't know. I don't know. But all the talk and stories I heard, I thought it was more like a...
Moving picture?
Yeah, that's why I wasn't so eager for us to come here.
Well, some of the places out of town are kind of like a moving picture set. This here's the old part of the town.
Oh.
Hey, let's go in this place.
Okay, but now listen. You remember your promise. No gambling on the slot machines. We're here just to look.
Okay.
Oh, those slot machines.
Hey, maybe we'll take a chance with a couple of nickels.
You promised that.
I know, but a couple of nickels isn't going to break
us. It's only a couple of nickels. It's like trying to eat one peanut or one potato chip.
I know, but that's only...
What's the matter? Why'd you stop?
Wait a minute.
Well, come on, Stanley. Don't just stand there.
Wait a minute.
What's the matter?
I'm standing on a dollar.
What?
I'm standing on a dollar.
Well, pick it up.
I can't.
Why?
I'm waiting for the guy at the slot machine to move.
Well, if it's his, you'd better... Well.
Okay. Now...
Probably just a cigar store.
Not with George Washington's face on it. This is a buck. $1. Good for 20 chances on the nickel slot machine.
What about your promise?
This is different. This don't count. If I lose this, it don't hurt the budget. Easy come, easy go.
All right, Stanley. You can gamble.
Yeah, come on. Let's go to the cashier. Give me nickels for this. Fine, thank you. Okay, here we go, Dora. Here's the slot machine. Well, here goes. Jackpot! Did you see, Dora? What did I tell you?
No, what did you tell me?
Well, I said, what's the difference? Put the nickels in that empty glass. Okay, now, let's try this machine over here. Okay, come to Daddy. I don't believe it.
I do. And two nickels fell into the cuff of your right trouser leg. You better get them before they pull your pants out of shape.
Dora, do you think it's possible?
Do I think what's possible?
That tonight might be... Well, you know it. Tonight might be one of those nights that everybody dreams of.
What are you talking about?
Well, maybe this is my lucky night. Outside the night, I met you, of course.
I don't know. We'll try another nickel and find out.
No.
Well, do you think this is your
lucky... No. I'm going for bigger stakes.
What are you talking about?
I'm going to take these nickels and cash them in for silver dollars, and I'm going to do it at that dice table over there, you see?
Yeah, I see,
but... Please, Dora, I don't know how long I'm going to be lucky. Don't argue, huh?
All right, Stanley, all right.
Come on.
All right, dear.
Mister?
Yes, sir?
Here's a glass full of nickels. Give me silver dollars for them.
Oh, here's one to start you off, sir, while we're counting them.
Yep.
And the dice are yours if you want them, sir.
Do I? Here, let me have them.
Mm-hmm. All bets down. Away we go.
Do it.
And the man rolls a 7. Make your bets, folks. We got a hot man with the cubes now. Oh, here you are.
Now let it ride. Let it ride. Okay, come on, 7. Do it, 11. 7. 7. 7. 7. 7.
$1,000 on the next roll.
Sorry, mister. The limit's 200 this here table.
What do you mean 200? I know it's more than that.
Well, actually, it is, sir. It's 500 almost any place in town, but that limit is reserved for certain people.
What people?
Well, sir, it's hard to say, but
Stanley, please, everybody's looking at you.
I don't care. I want to bet what I want to bet if these guys are afraid to gamble.
I assure you, sir, that we're not afraid. Perhaps you would care to speak to the manager.
I don't care to whom I speak, just so I can make the bet I want.
Have you any trouble, Tony?
No, sir, it's just that this gentleman wishes to exceed the limit of the house on his next bet.
Oh? How much did you care to bet, Mr., Stanley Simpson's the name. I want to bet $1,000.
Isn't that a little high?
Not when I just took your table here for $5,000. I came here to do some gambling, and if you can't accommodate me, I can take my patronage elsewhere. Is that right, Dora?
I guess so, Stanley.
Would you care to follow me to my office? It's just the other side of the roulette table. We can speak more freely in there.
Okay.
I'll get the game going, Charlie.
Yes, sir.
All right, folks. Get your bets down.
Are you sure that you know what you're doing, Stanley?
I know. This is the night for me. I can't waste time with $5 and $10 bets. This never happened to me before in my whole life, and I'm going to ride this streak for everything I can.
We could quit now and have all the things we've been saving for since we were married.
Or we could keep on going like I am now and get things we never even dreamed of having. Dora, I know what I'm doing. Now, just let me alone for a while.
Here we are, sir. Won't you sit down?
Yeah, okay.
Thank you.
So, you want to bet $1,000?
I told you that out there. You didn't have to get me in here to find that out.
Well, I'm merely getting the facts straight in my mind.
So, I want to bet $1,000. Where do I do it?
I have a private table in this building that caters only to people with considerable money. Now, have you any references?
No, but I got my driver's license and my discharge papers from the Army. The photostat, not the real papers.
May I see them, please?
Yeah, sure. Here you are.
Mm-hmm. Well, these seem to identify you pretty well.
Why shouldn't they? They're mine.
You realize, of course, that what I'm allowing you to do is highly irregular.
I don't care how irregular it is, as long as there ain't no limit on the game.
Pretty cocky, aren't you?
No, I'm not cocky. I only know I'm going to win, that's all.
Well, I think in the long run, I may be doing you a favor by allowing you to get into the big game. Maybe it'll teach you a lesson in real gambling.
Mister, you're making a big mistake.
What?
That's what I said. You're going to be sorry you ever let me in that room.
I am? Why?
Because they ain't going to teach me a lesson. It's going to teach you a lesson because I'm going to leave this town a very rich man. This is my lucky night.
Listening to Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. Tonight's play, Penny Ante. Look around the house. Everything snug and secure. Look more carefully. If there are frayed wires in your house, on lamps, on electrical fixtures, things are less secure than they seem. If there's burnable rubbish accumulating anywhere in your house, things aren't secure at all. Take stock of your home and eliminate fire hazards. The time you take to prevent a fire before it can happen is worth your life and property.
Only you can command forest fires.
That's right. Smokey says, only you can prevent forest fires.
Is that who said that? Yes.
Yeah. This guy's got the fever, man. He thinks he can win it all.
Oh, yeah. Oh, poor, poor wife. Why doesn't she have a baseball bat to knock him over the head and take the winnings and put him in the trunk of the car and drive home? But no.
Put him in the trunk of the car with the dead mobsters. There you go.
Yeah, you didn't have big reservoirs out there to put him in. They had to put him in the trunks.
Yeah, or cornfields. Cornfields are good.
Oh, yeah, there's that. Yeah. Do that.
Joe Pesci seems to end up in those a bit in films. Drag him out in the woods. But anywho, It's a pretty good story, and time is running short, so let's dive right into Penny Annie on stage. Part two. The conclusion.
Stanley, let's not get mixed up in this. I'm so scared.
What's to be afraid? Well, this is just like outside, only instead of a buck or so, they got chips for maybe $100 apiece.
I'll see you later.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yes?
Confidentially. This game ain't crooked, is it?
Frankly, no. The odds favor the house anyway, so why push a good thing too far? What's the matter? Afraid to play with the big boy?
No, I just... Well, you wait here for me, Dora. I'm going over the cashier.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm going with you.
Yeah, okay. See you later, mister.
Fine. Oh, by the way...
Yeah, what?
Let me know when you want to leave. I'll send an armored car around to get your money.
Bah! give me chips for this.
How much is there, sir?
$5,000 on the button. Want to count it?
Not necessary, sir. I believe you.
You do?
Yes, sir. Here you are, sir. Five white chips.
What? Five measly white chips for $5,000?
Please, sir, you're disturbing the game.
You mean that $5,000 is only five white chips?
Yes, sir. The smallest bet is $1,000.
Let's get out of here, Stanley.
Dora, will you cut it out? I told you this was my night. And I'm not going to let anybody think I'm a penny-ante gambler.
You would have been if we hadn't got stood up by your friend.
That was before I got lucky. Now I'm lucky. Now I'm not penny-ante anymore, and I got $5,000 of this joint's money to prove it.
You mean you've got five white chips?
Dora, it's all the same. Ah. The same thing. Come on.
Here we go, ladies and gentlemen. Have you all made your bets? Here's a latecomer. Would you like to bet before the next roll, sir, madam?
I'll wait till I get the dice.
That'll be after this gentleman, sir.
Okay.
Let's down. Here we go. An eight. Eight's the gentleman's point. Eight up on Decatur. Make your bet. On the field. 5,000 on the don't pass. Yes, sir. Here we go. No more bets. Seven out. Here we go. The dice are all yours, sir.
Thank you. Okay, baby. Do it for Stanley. Here we go, Dora. Don't you worry about thinking. I can feel these babies dying to go to work for me. All right, then. Come on. Seven.
And the gentleman rolls a seven. A big natural. Here you are, Dora.
Thank you, my man. Here we go again. Okay, come to Daddy. Keep the freckles right. 5-2 me. 4-3 me. 6-1 me. Just so long as you add up to 7.
Can we go now, Stanley?
Oh, what time you got, Dora?
It's 10:00 in the morning.
10:00?
Yeah, and it's about time you quit. I'm about to die of starvation.
No wife of mine is going to die of starvation while I got $90,000.
Stanley, let's go.
Not yet, Dora. Not yet.
But I'm hungry.
So am I. But I can't quit now. Not while I'm doing so good.
Does money mean more to you than my life?
Dora, will you please don't talk silly? Of course I love you more than money.
And why won't you buy me something to eat? Please, Stanley, take me to a restaurant.
But, Dora...
Then take me to the car. I don't mind stale sandwiches or dry pickles. I just love you so hungry.
Dora.
Well...
Now... All right, honey, we'll leave.
Thanks, Stanley, darling.
Dora... Dora, are you sure this isn't a trick just to get me out of here?
Pardon me, sir. The dice are yours now.
Look. I can't play no more.
My wife's hungry. I got to take her to a restaurant.
Hungry? Well, just tell us what you wish, sir. I'll have it sent in.
Hey, did you hear that, honey? We don't have to leave after all. We can order and have it sent in, and that's well.
I'm not hungry. I just want to lie down
for a while. Oh, very well, madam. There's a lounge adjoining this room at your disposal. The matron in there will make you comfortable.
There. That's a good idea, honey. You grab a few hours shut-eye and rest up. We'll be leaving soon.
All right, Stanley. I guess I'll go to sleep.
Yeah, that's fine. You ready, Mac?
I see yours, sir.
You betcha they are. You just bet your sweet life they are.
The point, folks. Make your bet. Coming out.
Hello, Stan.
Oh, honey, how are you? Hey, did you have a good sleep?
Pretty good. Can we go home now?
Yeah, just a minute. Hey, Mac, call me when the dice come around to me, huh?
Yes, sir.
Come here, Dora. Mm-hmm. All right, here we are, Dora. Now, sit down.
Thanks.
Honey, I know you want me to go home, but right now I can't.
Why not?
Because right now, I'm winning $180,000.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then why not quit now when you're ahead?
Don't you see? My luck hasn't changed yet, and as long as it's going this way, I'm going to ride it for all it's worth.
How will you know when your luck changes?
Look, Dora, I got it all figured out. Remember what time it was when I found that dollar by the slot machine?
No, I don't.
I do. It was exactly 12 o'clock midnight Friday.
Well, what's that got to do with...
Give me a chance, Dora. I'm getting to it.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I figure that something happened to me that lots of guys dream about. Somehow, I can't tell you why, I'm going to be lucky for 24 hours.
What are you talking about?
What I'm trying to say is that up until midnight tonight, I'm going to be lucky enough to win. After that, I won't.
But you haven't won every time you rolled the dice, have you?
No, I haven't, but I've won more often than I've lost, and that's why I'm $180,000 to the good.
$180,001, counting the dollar you found.
No, $180,000 even, that's included.
So what you're trying to tell me is that you want to keep on like this till midnight? Is that it?
On the button.
But you'll be dead when you go back to work Monday morning.
If things go the way they've been going, I may never go back to work again.
Stanley!
I mean it. You don't expect me to go back to that office and beat my brains out for $75 a week, do you?
But it's such a good job, steady with paid vacation.
Who needs it?
We do.
Not after midnight tonight, we won't.
Your dice, Mr. Vincent.
Yeah, I'll be right there. You see that, honey? You get a couple of bucks ahead. Right away, they're calling me Mr. Finston.
When Mr. Allison at the office calls you, he always says Mr. Finston.
Allison, that clock-watching company man. He's just playing it safe. I'll bet you if we could look into his mind...
So ready, Mr. Finston?
Yeah, here I come. Now, look, Dora, don't you worry about a thing. When midnight comes, I'm going to be a rich man.
Or a pumpkin.
That makes it an even $250,000. Is that right?
Right, Mr. Finston. You must have done all right while I was off.
I did good. Now that you're back, I got some bad news for you.
Bad news?
Yep, tell him, Dora.
Mr. Finston promised me he was going to quit at midnight.
That's your privilege, sir.
Yeah, but it ain't midnight yet. I got time for one more roll.
Stanley, you promised.
Yeah, I promised. I promised midnight. I didn't promise 2 minutes to midnight.
What's the difference?
I wouldn't want to hang by my neck for the difference.
Well, what can you do in 2 minutes?
I can make myself $250,000.
Stanley, you wouldn't.
Oh, wouldn't I? You just stand right there and watch me, Dora. This is the time in life in which the men are separated from the boys.
Stanley, $250,000 is a lot of money.
And $500,000 is twice that much. I'm going to make $500,000, Dora. I'm going to be so rich, I'll buy that old office building. I'll buy the whole accounting business. And when I do, I'm going to fire that old Allison so fast he won't even have time to look at the clock on his way out.
Please, Stanley, enough already. Take our money and let's go.
Dora. Dora, my dear. I am very much in love with you, but this is a business for a man, where a man makes the decision.
Make your bets, ladies and gentlemen.
Mac, Here's a whole bundle. I'm betting $250,000 on my next and my last roll.
But, Mr. Finston, I don't know...
What's the matter? You afraid to play with the big boys, Mac?
Dan, please.
I'll have to check with the manager to see if I can cover that amount, Mr. Finston.
Okay. Check.
Mr. Richards, this is Carl in the private room. Yes. Mr. Finston wants the house to cover a bet of $250,000. $250,000. Mr. Finston. Yes, that's the one. I don't either. Yes, sir.
Hey, Mac.
Just a moment, Mr. Richards. Yes, Mr. Finston?
Tell your boss in 5 minutes I want an armored car. Should be at the side entrance.
Mr. Richards, Mr. Finston. Oh, you heard. Very well, sir. Very well, sir. Your dice.
Stanley.
All right, here we go. Come on, little babies. Make me $500,000. Money. Money. Do it for me. The richest man in the world. Come on, seven. Come on, seven. The gentleman rolls a deuce. Craps. You lose. Dora?
Yes, Dan.
Let's go home, huh?
Something planned.
No, it's okay, Al.
What'd you do over the weekend?
Went up to Las Vegas.
Oh? Did you gamble?
Yeah.
Well, how'd you make out?
Yeah. I lost a dollar.
Penny Ante, starring Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. In a moment, Mr. and Mrs. Lewis will tell you about next week's play.
CBS, CBS Radio will follow you wherever you may go. So if you want the very best, do nothing and be our guest on CBS, CBS, CBS Radio.
And now, once again, Kathy and Elliot Lewis. Because Byron Kane wasn't able to play poker with me, Peter Leeds was a croupier who cashed my first dollar bet.
And when you continued winning, manager of the club, Jay Novello, took you into a private room, and Edgar Barrier was the croupier in there.
And Byron was waiting for me when I got back to the office Monday morning.
So it was really his fault that it all happened.
Next week, a lovely idea that turned out to be a lovely script that we think will play in a lovely manner.
It's about love. Three short plays about love. It was written for us by Arthur Ross, and it's called Loving.
Until next week, thank you for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Good. Lots of time for shameless promotion.
Good, I have one. Or two.
A musical. They should have a suicide prevention phone there on the casino. Guy lost a quarter mil.
No kidding. Either that or a SWAT team at the ready to prevent the wife from taking out the husband.
There you go. That's true. Trauma.
Wow. That is the most forgiving spouse. I mean.
Yeah.
Oh, I just, I don't know.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garrulous moral of the story, as written by Gar.
It's apologies for the way I'm about to give Gar's line. In both winning or losing, there's the thrill.
They say that's actually what hooks a gambler. It's like dopamine in their brain goes berserk when they're playing. It's the thrill of it. It's not the winning and the losing. It's the thrill. And it's addictive, I guess.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know. Can't you do something simpler? Skydiving? You know?
Actually, I do have a shameless plug, Dale. I have a weirdest, really bad movie, and the Traverse Studio has a couple of entries into a online film festival. We have the Spaceship One episode and the Frankenstein Drax Comedy Castle, Frankie's stand-up. And I'd like to invite everybody to get over to either my Weirdness Really Bad Movie Facebook page or the Facebook page of my own for Dave Binkley. And you'll see my monster picture there. And there's direct links to go there, and you can give us a thumbs up for a vote. So help us on our very first attempt at a film festival. We already made the cut, and right now they're doing some voting. So come vote for us!
Is it a live event?
It is. It's an online event.
Online event. Okay.
Right, but the voting closes in 2 days. Sunday, it closes. And today, and tomorrow, and a little bit into Sunday here, and come vote for us. That's Facebook, you used to do at TWRBM or search for Dave Binkley. See my monster made picture, face picture. So
there it
come
is.
Come for us. Give us a thumbs up.
Can do.
That's
go.
It for me. So, Dale,
that's it.
What's happening tomorrow
on the
Eerie House Radio?
The weirdness is really Eerie House Radio.
I know. I'm weirdness in the brain, sorry.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater, Bet with the Angels. That's going to be tomorrow at 6:30 Eastern.
Good story.
We're just 2 weeks away from Halloween weekend. We got a music night. We're going to have a Halloween drive-in with a double feature, no less. A tribute to Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff. And, of course, our rendition of War of the Worlds. That'll be on the 30th. So that's the 27th, Friday, through the 30th, Monday.
And,
Four consecutive days of grueling radio.
This year it is the 50th anniversary of War of the Worlds, as presented by National Public Radio. So there we go.
Yep, and we invite you to join us for the marathon of four nights in a row, if you can do it. If not, they'll be in the archive. No worries. Want to thank Duck, Northwest Media, Fogs, Bane, and Godall Bob, as always. And, Gar, get well soon. We'll see you tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And her.
When next we meet Frankenstone.
Happy 13th Friday.
Don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
Now what the? Yeah, real funny, Vince. Except Blog Talk said I had 9 more seconds to play with. Why?
Shame on them. Shame on them.
The timing and the lag time on this is amazing sometimes. We are tinkering, however.
Gentlemen. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I don't want you.
Really much.
You got to fly?
I'm afraid I do. That and the fact I'm a little nervous. Every time we try an after party, my signal goes wonky.
It's true. It does. It's like,
well,
I don't know what it is.
I don't want you to miss this out. Real quick before you go. I want to announce that Dave and I are going to experiment with Mixcloud, and we'll be able to do stuff that's outside of the public domain. We're working on the details. It could take some time in coming, but I thought you'd like to know that before you shuffle off to Buffalo.
Ah, yes, indeed. Thank you for that. Just absolutely fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. So, gentlemen, nice strong signal tonight.
Yes.
But I don't want to press my luck since this is a gambling theme.
And it's Friday the 13th. You may not want to take your chances.
I don't want to press the luck. So, fabulous show. Enjoyed myself as always, but I'll do my last duty of the evening properly. I've skimped on that because, again, my signal went crackers. Mr. Durante, if you can hear me, Mr. Durante, please make your way to the stage. It's all yours.
Good night. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say
good night.
Goodbye.
Good night, goat. Where's that giggling jerking?
Silly day. We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo, toodaloo.
And inka, inka, do. Yeah.
Good night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
She's at the casino right now, actually.
Radio.